Welcome to the Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Are you a small business owner who thinks they pay too much in taxes? We can help. Give us a call or book a meeting by clicking the link in the show notes to book a free financial consultation so you can have peace of mind about your financial future. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting those members with their mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as a key to unlock your workforce. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again, my favorite day of the week, Podcast Friday, here with my co-host, Al McDonald. Al, what are you saying this week?
Well, Robin, usually we have a little bit of banter, but today I think we need to dive right into it because we've got not one, but two very special guests, and people don't want to hear from us, they want to hear from them.
Well, I couldn't agree more. So returning to the show, came on individually at first. Now returning to the show as the dynamic duo, two of my favorite human beings on the planet, quite honestly, Amanda Small and Joshua Siegel. Welcome to the show, team.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Such a pleasure. I honestly, for a month, have been like, I cannot wait to have these four people together. So I'm really excited to be here.
What a dream team.
It is the dream team. And I noticed something because, Amanda, I was on your LinkedIn because I had to check with something. And I noticed it isn't there officially, but it is in spirit. You have Champion of Kindness on your LinkedIn profile.
Yes.
Can you tell me about that? Why is that there?
I so believe that all the hard things can be navigated. Every hard thing can be almost an adventure and a discovery if we come from kindness. And so for me, and Josh and I do a lot of hard things in HR. We have to do a lot of hard things. We have to do a lot of really cool things too. But I think always leading with just that space of the heart first, kindness first, discovery first. You know, there are lots of things I get my shoulders up about. There are lots of things that also challenge me, or I might, you know, have some reactions to. But if I can really lean towards people with kindness, that's always where I see some of the most incredible magic and change happen, both for myself, it's transformative for me, but certainly in the roles that I have with companies and with leaders and with people, kindness, being kindness and kind of a heart-led leader has always been my secret sauce for the most part. And I also lately have been really just thinking about when it's not going well in life or in a conversation or in mediation, anything that's going on in employee relations, if we can take that pause, and sometimes I even say the words, I want to pause here and just really take a deep breath to recenter ourselves that we're all here trying to solve whatever the issue is, whatever the disagreement might be, whatever that thing is between us. And being that champion in the room, it's taken me some time too. When I was younger, I was quite reactive. I think that's just been a real deepening of my practice. And so that's why I say I'm the champion of kindness. No matter what's happening, I'm always going to look for how can I lean towards the person, not lean away. I think that's a really big part of who I am.
This is one of the reasons why I just like being around people like you and like Josh, because I find it infectious and infectious. The last couple of years hasn't been such a great word, but infectious in such a great way. But Josh, every interaction that I've had with you and I've witnessed on LinkedIn, because you've got a lot of interactions on LinkedIn, you exude kindness as well. Can you talk about just where that comes from?
First and foremost, to double down on what Amanda said, like, this is an individual and a leader who truly practices what she preaches. I've known Amanda for a couple of years now. And if there was a UFC of kindness, Amanda would be the greatest champion of all time, pretty much in perpetuity. Someone with just a giant heart, giant care for everything that she does in the relationships that she nourishes. So Like, there is authenticity in what she's preaching here. For me, when I think about HR, you think about the stereotypes around HR. Big, bad, scary HR, don't trust them, don't want to talk to them. This comes from some bad behaviors around typically hard to do things. So think about layoffs, performance improvement conversations. These aren't fun endeavors, but you can still do them with kindness. And thinking about the how behind those really tough engagements that you have to do and leading, like Amanda said, with kindness and a human-centric perspective, we can shift the narrative around HR that, yes, we do have to do hard things, but we're not going to do it in a scary way. We're going to do it in a human way. We're going to think about our people and treat people in a way they deserve to be treated in the work environment.
This is why I wanted to have you on, because it's not often that we get to speak to two people, two such great leaders in people and culture. And I have to be honest, when I was approaching this episode, I thought, how am I going to ask questions to people who know 100 times more than I do in people and culture? So you know what I did? I reached out to our good friend, Joanna Kimmich, and I said, what's hot right now? Because I got to fire some questions off because I know I'll get great answers, but I don't even know the questions asked. So wonderful, Joanna. Joanna's feeling a little bit under the weather right now. So Joanna, hope you're feeling better by the time this episode comes out. So can we fire off some questions? Does that sound okay with you?
I love it. Let's do it.
Okay. So from a strategic standpoint, Al and I have talked about the fact that we wish when we had started the company, we had brought in HR a lot sooner, right? But it's hindsight. You don't know these things. And I've even heard from other people, they're in the similar boat when we talk to companies. But I think for the longest time, and I think it's beginning to change now, but why has it been so challenging for HR leaders to be seen as this strategic part of the C-suite and finally getting a seat at the table? Why has that taken so long to get to where it is and what still needs to be done?
This is such a sort of beautiful and meaty topic. And I'm so curious your perspective here, Josh, because I am only 10 years into my sort of people and culture leadership role. So I want to just share from someone who hard pivoted in from really not knowing, although I knew more than I realized, right? Sometimes you don't know what you don't know. But coming in from the not-for-profit, from the art world, just really much more of a player in that scene than a leader in that scene. Coming into tech, one of the things that I think resonates about what you're saying is who we show up as really matters. And so when leaders are bringing in their first people and culture person, I do think there is the aspirational and then there's the operational. And a lot of times where we end up coming in, at least at first, and this was my experience, I can't say for anyone else, but my experience was there was so many tactical executional things to do because there was no operations as a center of excellence, right? There's no business or program management, really. And everyone's just doing what they can do. And it's a really dynamic, exciting, juicy environment. But there's just, everyone's wearing a million hats. Nobody has really clearly defined roles often. And so we come in and I think we're a little bit like both the whistleblower and the sage, right? We're coming in and saying, okay, here's this whole world of people and culture that we need to stand up the table stakes around. We got to stand up and build core processes that are going to get us to this aspiration you're talking about. Because we're not going to just show up on day one and fix your engagement or your culture issues. I mean, first of all, we don't do that. I know everyone thinks we do that, but we don't do that. We actually come in and really start to build the foundation of what is going to have your culture, your engagement, your productivity show up in. So when we show up with, I think, this really strategic view of how we get there, there's, I call it the long game of coaching, mirroring, and supporting leaders to understand that if we're using all of our time to be executional and tactical, we're not going to get to that moonshot. We're not going to get to that aspirational place they're looking for. And it does happen over time. I just really believe that culture and engagement is a living, breathing entity. And again, I always think about who I'm showing up right now matters. Who leaders are showing up as right now really matters. There's no performance management system on the planet. I'm telling you, I think I've tried about 100. There are no systems that are going to do it. What is going to happen is we have to coach and support leaders understanding that who we show up as really, really matters. That is the most important strategic decision they can make, and really aligning themselves with, I almost think it's a little, Josh, you've talked about this so eloquently before, I think on another podcast, but where you really talked about the importance of separating out that deep thinking, creative, innovative space, where we're not just doing stuff all the time. We can't actually get to those critical strategic energies if we are just, you know, in meetings doing and executing. And I do think that as we tease out how important and how transformational it is for your business and for your people to work with someone who is like, I know you've got a laundry list for me. Let's talk about who you're being in the space of this. Like, how are we showing up for this? Because I have a graveyard of things I have tried tactically that didn't stick because of who we were showing up as.
Amanda said something quite wonderful there. It takes time and space to be able to dig into truly meaningful strategic work. And if you go and survey 100 people and culture leaders right now and say, do you have the resources on your team to go and do all of the work you need to do to run your people and culture function? I would say 99, if not 100 out of 100 will tell you, no, we are not properly resourced. The world of people and culture has gotten infinitely more complex than it has in the past. So the expectations are much broader and much deeper on a multitude of sub-teams that are part of this people and culture function. So you have people and culture professionals, leaders especially, drowning under a mountain of tactical work that has to be done. So when you want them to step up and be strategic, how are you creating the time and space, either by we're okay with projects X, Y, and Z being pushed out, not being done so you can focus strategically, or we're going to invest in your function so you can scale meaningfully and drive the truly strategic work that will build the foundations of that great culture, of the workplace experience that you want, of the performance you want to drive within your organization. It's all about time, space, which you unlock either through prioritization or through resourcing.
I look at our own experience, and I think I've told this story on the podcast before. For the first, 15, 16 years of our existence, you know, table stakes for us in the beginning, we were equal partners, every sense of the word. We all had different skill sets in terms of what we brought to product specialization, but even skills within running a company. And I always joke around that we were successful in spite of ourselves, because I remember year after year, we'd have these wonderful meetings talking about these aspirational ideas that we had and where we were going to go. And then nothing would happen. We would come back the following year and say, oh, well, how come that didn't happen? And yet we were still growing. And then we made a decision a couple of years ago to restructure inside. We're still all equal partners, but we had said, hey, certain really important decisions need to be made within the company. Al, you're our CEO. So Al is more on the operational side, even though he's still working with clients. So we all have our different role. And the success we've seen from that, I think we've had our best years. And this year will certainly be our best year ever. We're already on track for that. But one of the things that Al had brought up very early on when we had made that change was we had a fractional HR person, and we were holding these C-suite meetings biweekly to make sure we were on track. And he said, table stakes is going to be, her name is Elizabeth. Elizabeth is going to be in that meeting every single time because she was such an important force in our company. And it has been a game changer. Like, we just found another person that is just going to be, I mean, you never know until time will tell, but to me, seems like it's just going to be a perfect fit into our company and able to drive us to that next level. So I love what I'm hearing, and it tells me we're on the right track in terms of making sure this person does feel that they have a seat at the table.
Yes, definitely. And again, you hit it, Robin. That voice from a different perspective on the human side is something that we were probably missing. And again, Amanda, you said this before, you don't know what you don't know, right? And then once someone opens your eyes, and at least now you realize that you don't know. So that in itself is a big step. But Josh, I wanted to go back to something you said, because you said 99, if not 100 people in your space would say, you know, they don't have the resources. We've got too much stuff to do and not enough opportunity to aspire to where we want to get to. And you also both brought up the fact that there's more to do. But I guess from my point of view, it seems to me that at least, again, it's kind of that, at least now we know that. Like, my question is, do you think that's getting better or worse?
Rough question for 2024. So let me say that. I think if you look at the round after round of layoffs and who's getting laid off as part of this, people and culture is getting demolished. And this is going to have long-term ramifications on cultures, long-term ramifications on development opportunities for employees within organizations. We're not seeing the investment in learning and development in the various people supports. You think about the macro environment right now, from an economy perspective, geopolitical perspective, it is such a hard world. And we're taking away the supports inside organizations that would help employees navigate it, continue to work in a meaningful way through it. It is a horrific recipe for disaster. So I would say right now, in this moment, things are much, much worse than they've been over the past few years. But like everything, cyclicality in nature, I'm sure we'll see it rebound as the economy rebounds. But how much damage will be done before that happens?
So what I think I just heard is there's maybe still this perception that it's a nice to have when things are going well, but it's not necessary to drive the business.
Well, something Josh just pointed to as well, if we're going to talk a little bit about risks, is when you're non-revenue generating in the business, when you look at the analysis of where the allocation and the spends are in the business, I think what we've been missing, and it is, people are raising the red flag about this, but actually people and culture is revenue generating because we are supporting all of the people. So when you cut out talent acquisition and you have hiring managers who don't really actually understand the skills matrix that's required to fully integrate with the business and drive the performance of the business, you get what you get. And I think about that so much that, like, myself, I've had to, you know, even downsize my own team. And then I am not an expert in every area of the people and culture function. You need people on your team who are better than you at certain things. That's why you bring them in. And so as we, again, just sort of load up standalone leaders with the entire HR function and say, like, okay, you're going to do everything. We need to, you know, get the business back on track and stabilize. I think to myself, that's not a thing. We can't actually do what we were doing without really looking holistically at what does good look like. And good looks like, yes, hitting your numbers. Good looks like an environment that's productive and performing. Yes. But that takes a lot of foundational core programs and processes of support. As Josh just said, it's the actual program support. It's also the soft support. It's actually being with your team, coaching them, talking to them, having those hard conversations. All of that is skill building and all of that is stabilizing. And when you take it away, not only are the leaders then like, ugh, I mean, we're completely drowning, as Josh says, a perfect, I was like, yes, we're looking for a buoy out in the seas, being like, what can I hang on to here? We hang on to the leadership teams, but you know, the rest of the organization is often hanging on to us, right? We're doing the work of many. And it's really critical work, but I think we need to shift that narrative when we're looking for how do we ensure the long-term success of the business? It isn't always who's going to drive revenue. That is not, we've seen that. Hitting your revenue numbers does not ensure the long-term success of your business. I think that too, and Josh really speaks so eloquently about that, that when we're really looking at, again, what does good look like? We need to be very I think, critical and strategic about that view. And I think that's, in this current environment, has been really challenging.
So, Amanda, I'm going to double down. And I know Robin's dying to get in here too, but I'm going to double down right now, because we started off about saying that the importance of your role to the C-suite and all that kind of stuff. And everything that you just said about how important, you know, it's not all about revenue. Can you think of situations where instead of the CEO or the leader of any company coming from, because we hear this all the time, it was the CFO, now they're the CEO, the finance background or operations background. Can we think of any situation where companies are now being led by someone who came from more of your space?
Ooh.
Or will that happen in the future? If people always say our people are the most important element of our business.
There are definitely companies out there who are saying that. Where I've been really interested lately is because I really come from the early stage startup space. That's where I play the best. And I think that's where leaders typically really sort of see a lot of value in what I bring. I love the disruptor. I think it's been really interesting to see people coming over. Is it Allison Vendetti with Moms at Work? Just, I mean, so incredible. People sort of coming from a legal background or really some interesting product disruptors who are saying, I want to come in and found a space or a company or a program or whatever. And they're bringing, you know, it's not the typical sales or technology leader, I guess I would say. And I do think that's going to be really interesting to watch how that shifts. I'm really a big fan of Ellie Vest, Sally Krawcheck. I don't know her background, but I really appreciate the disruptors in this space. What I would love to see, Al, before I went into HR heavy, I just spoke with someone who went through a pilot program that I started, but 10 years ago, I did a pilot program through just my connections with startup here, Toronto. And I did like an artist being mentored by business pilot program called Tenacity. And the artists, what was so interesting, we had investors, we had C-level mentors, and the people who are mentoring from business at the C-level were like, the artists are incredible thinkers. They are so interesting. They share ideas that I've just never heard anyone sort of think that way. And I do think that we're missing some of that because business has always run business as usual by the people who typically kind of pull those strings around either strong operations or finance backgrounds. And I think some of the best accountants in the world are musicians. They know how to compose music. And I think if we could leverage a little bit more of that, we would see some really interesting disruption happening. But I don't know, Josh, I'm really curious to hear because I feel like you're a little bit more in the know than me. I'm always like floating on the outskirts.
Other than kind of HR tech, I can't think of organizations currently led by folks who have grown up in the HR space. I do think there would be massive value depending on the size and scale of the organization. So if you think early stage, founder-driven, you typically need someone who understands customers, understands business, paired, if you're in the tech space, with a technical founder. So you need those two skill sets in the early days as the founders, as the drivers. If you're not getting product market fit, however effective you work with your team isn't overly important. But if you think of an organization that has scaled, has that product market fit, has some sort of technical infrastructure in place, having a CEO whose background is coaching, development, building next generation leaders, other than kind of board management, shouldn't that be the main things a CEO is focused on? Building his stable of leadership, empowering them to go lead, and also fostering a culture that they can be proud of. So I think the HR senior leader is very well positioned to become CEO, head of an appropriately scaled and sized organization. And I think it just takes a progressive board to say, hey, we're going to take a chance and see what type of culture and company you can build through a people lens. But personally, I would love to see a lot more of it.
Josh, that sounds like an incredible company. If I wasn't busy running our own and trying to build our own, that sounds pretty appealing to me. And it's inspirational because the coaching part, I mean, we're bringing on a lot of young people. And it's a good reminder for us as leaders in the organization to be that leader for younger people and create those opportunities. I was hoping to cover something that maybe isn't so fun to talk about, but there's a lot of going on in tech right now. There's a lot of layoffs. What do you see for the next, let's call it 2024, the future of tech right now? Because there's a lot of people being laid off. There's going to be an influx of people looking for jobs. How do you think that's going to affect those companies in the next 12 months or so?
Every single thing in life, the ocean, day, night, our heartbeat, our breath, it's rhythm and pulse, it's cyclical. We're in a downturn right now. Everybody knows that. It's tough times. It will bounce back. Will it be in 2024? I'm not confident enough to predict that. I think we still have some hard times ahead of us. So organizations are going to have to be really thoughtful on how do you navigate those hard times. Layoffs are a tool that many organizations are using. I would say it's not the only tool. And I think many organizations are looking at their peers and saying, they're doing this. Now's an opportunity for us to do it as well. And there may be longer term ramifications for that, especially how they go about doing it. So we talked earlier about kindness and that human-centric lens. I think the organizations who do everything they can in their power right now to stay human first, add value to their customers and their employees, and be really thoughtful on how they manage and maintain their culture through this downturn will be best suited for a huge rebound when the cycle shifts and we move back into that upturn. But we need deep intentionality and deep thoughtfulness during these hard times to prepare ourselves to be ready for when we do turn the corner.
And Amanda, from your perspective, I'd love to hear, so there's layoffs. I mean, we're all dealing with that. We see it on LinkedIn. And one of the cool trends that started happening last year when I saw layoffs was, you know, leadership of those organizations saying, hey, here's a list of people that unfortunately got laid off, and putting it out there to say, if there's anybody out there that can hire good people, here they are. So I like seeing that. And I think that might be unique to tech because that's the only place I saw that. So that's great. What about the people who are not getting laid off? What are the things that you're doing to make sure we're going to take care of these people? We're going to make sure they feel really good about where they are so that you retain these people so that you can continue to grow the company.
Where sometimes we miss the mark a little or can, I think it's really important to allow some time for grief and allow some time for, you know, a lot of times we're like, okay, new champ, you know, that was terrible. We'll help these people out. And then we're like, all right, here's our strategy. And I really would like to slow that down and say things like, this is going to be really challenging for a while. And I can do and will be alongside you, that we're only going to get there by just taking a beat and taking a pause and really thinking about, Josh, you just said deep intentionality. I think there's deep intentionality required for the as kind and as humane and as heart-centric you can be for redundancy. But I think there's also that as deeply intentional as you can be, I mean, do the planning, do the deep work to think about what does it look like 30, 60, 90, 6 months, a year later, what does it look like? And do some scenario planning, really allow your leaders to be part of that, really bringing them into, we don't always know everything. And we also don't need to move right to, all right, wrap it up and let's like go to the next. Okay, we're all in it together and let's be resilient. Listen, that's important. We do have to do that. And we do need to be resilient. But the first piece is like, it sucks. It sucks. And we need a little bit of time to like be together on that. Really challenging. And allow a little more air there because I feel that I've done, I think, riffs at every company except Nest so far. And there is this space and it's human and I get it. of like, okay, we got to move on. And I really would like to just pause that a little bit. I think that's really, really important. Your team can do the hardest things with you when you show up that way. They really can. The best, can I call it that? Downsizing that I ever did, we spent a lot of time in the following months. Wasn't weeks, it was months, because we weren't going to grow again. We actually never grew again until we were acquired. And that was 2.5 years later. So we actually had to do the business that we were doing with 20% more people with 20% less. And you know what? We did do it. And we had no churn, a little, but you know, we had very low churn. We talked a lot. We were small. So this doesn't necessarily translate into the sizes of companies that Josh is with, but we really took some time and we spent time asking over telling. And I think that's so important, sort of saying, how will we solve this? How can you help? What are some of the things that you see or know that maybe we don't? Because when you're planning for it, you can't ask everybody. But afterwards, you have that opportunity to really spend some time. And I have found that there's almost just a little too much like, all right, let's move on. And I think that actually harms more than helps in the long term.
Robin and Al, I know I'm the guest, but I would actually love to play host for like 30 seconds and ask Amanda a follow-up question to that.
Please do.
Yes.
Amazing. Okay.
Interested.
So we know tech founders, tech leaders, they always talk about speed. Speed to market. We have to be fast, execute fast, get this out tomorrow. It's a common theme in the world of tech.
Right.
And it exhausts tech workers. I wholeheartedly agree with you. Healing cannot be fast. You need to slow it down. You need to take a beat. I think there are a lot of things in the people and culture sphere that require slow thoughtfulness and intentionality. You can't expedite culture building. It is a long-term initiative. So Amanda, in your history where you need to get these tech founders, tech leaders to slow down, take a beat, not follow your typical MO, what are some strategies you've deployed to help slow them down? Because boy, they do not like it.
No, it's uncomfortable. And I think sometimes it's even just saying that this is really uncomfortable. And the less we are with it, that which you resist persists. You know, I think there's such an important partnership and level of trust and advisory that leaders need to have with their people and culture people. And if that's not there, they're not going to slow down. They're not going to take necessarily our advice. And one thing that I've really learned is that it's still a struggle for me, but one thing that I am in a work in progress around learning is the goodness of the outcome. However much I want it to be a certain way, it's not always up to me. But what is up to me is exactly who I show up as. Am I authentic? Am I giving that piece of advice that is so integral for a positive outcome from my perspective? Are we able to talk about it a click out as leaders who are not senior leaders? Can we actually bring our whole selves to those conversations? Very vulnerable, very much in the space of grief with them, and share that authentically to say, this is our problem to solve, but ultimately it is the leadership's. I mean, that's how we get there, right? We get there based on our decisions. And so I think just taking some time to have those hard conversations is really important. And that's what I really saw at Jibestream. And I'll call out Chris Wiegand here. He had some really interesting quirks as a leader, but his ability to deeply connect with his team in the good times and the bad times was something I have just never seen. He really went with the full kind of openness that I think when you are grieving, there's just a deep sense of kind of like, okay, you're not a robot. You feel this with me. You're not just executing on the plan. I don't know, Josh, but after a riff, I am gutted. I am like, I have to stand outside and gulp air because in the moment, my full commitment is the other person's heart. But afterwards, I am ripped. I am just like, and that's not just with a riff. That's with any termination I've ever had to do. It doesn't matter. You could do 1,000 in your career and it never, for me, it's never changed. It always feels that way. And I think even sharing that is really important for people to know that we as leaders, we're right there with you. We're not like, you know, doing something to people and then being like, come along. And I'll also share, I think it's really important, this part too. Leaders don't always listen to what I say. They don't. And that's really important that there are times I've had to be like, we're not going to do it the way that I want. The after heal is not going to go the way I want it to. And we're not going to do the things. And so I also prepare for what I just talked about, which is I can show up exactly how I am in the face of something really hard and in the face of no agreement. When I don't agree, it's my commitment that I still show up as I am. And that's, I think, been very important to how it's gone, especially when the leader's not taking my advice necessarily.
Amanda, you said that leaders don't always listen.
No.
But for a second, because I'm listening and Al is definitely listening. Name of this series is Success Leaves Clues. And through this conversation, you and Josh have both given us a lot of clues. But if we're walking away and you're talking to people who are leading organizations, what would be the few pieces of advice as you go through tumultuous times that you would say, focus on these areas? And maybe we'll give you a rest for a bit, Amanda, but Josh, what are the things that, and I'd love to hear from both of you, what are those things that you're telling those leaders?
Well, let's go back to the beginning of the podcast. Do it with kindness. Mm-hmm. Do it within in a human-centric way and make that be your lens. So that's an easy one to start off with. Two, trust the experts. So when building out a marketing strategy, you trust your CMO and your head of marketing. If you're doing some really hard things from a people perspective, please, please, please listen and trust your people leaders. Let them be the drivers. Understand this is their wheelhouse. They probably have more experience than you in doing this. Trust in their expertise. And listen to the folks that you've brought in on your team that are experts in the space.
Amanda?
I guess I think about when a leader works with a subject matter expert. As Josh just said, we often say, I think, choose the, maybe it's rituals, if I think of engineers, or the practices, or the cadence that's going to really reinforce and build the culture you want. And I would say, as a leader, bring the rituals and practice every day that is your most authentic, most integrated self. And that includes when you are gutted. When you're like, I am drowning. I am underwater, whatever. I think that self is the best self to show up with. That is you showing up. And building your practices around your integrated self is just like, as a leader, you really can't get it wrong. Now, you're going to mess stuff up, but you don't get it wrong because you are there. I think sometimes leaders, you know, I can't imagine, but as a leader myself, knowing when I'm not showing up as my authentic self, I make decisions and I have practices and rituals that don't work. They don't work for me and they don't work for others. And I suffer and my team suffers. And so I don't think we talk enough about that, that it's really that best self is the person to bring into these really challenging times. And it's the person to build your practices and rituals around because then it's thriving, right? Josh, you said something earlier about the market, like everything, like breath being cyclical. Our evolution of self, our evolution of our leadership, it's always moving and growing. It's not cyclical like we're going to come back, but sometimes you do. Sometimes you actually do go back and say, aha, I had to learn again. But I think being so present to that, that there's no place like you are, you haven't like hit the pinnacle. And that as you navigate these times, we're all trying to show up as our true selves. So that's a really important piece. I feel like I coach a lot of leaders on that, but I often, as an HR leader, who do we go to really say, I need to show up as my whole self with you? And I think that's a challenge. And so that has to be kind of the self-integration part, but really coming back to that.
Robin, we can't do a whole podcast and not talk about martial arts. And Amanda talked about there's no pinnacle to leadership development and growing as a leader. And it's the same thing as the journey in karate.
Same thing, yeah.
It's why when you're alive, you never reach that 10th Dan black belt.
Yeah.
Right? You're always learning. There's always more you can absorb. And to say that I'm the highest level of this particular practice, like, that only happens when you die. There's always more to learn.
Exactly. And don't forget, as much as you continue to learn, we can talk about karate, we can talk about jiu-jitsu, we can talk about martial arts, it continues to evolve just like business does too. So even if you think I'm finally at that point, the business has evolved and now there's more to learn. You know, I got up this morning, I got up at 6 to hit the gym, and I thought, wow, I'm so lucky. I get to chat with people I really enjoy chatting with. And I've learned so much, not only on this episode, but just hanging around both of you. And I remember being at Tech Talent North, and I was with you, Josh, and you, Amanda, and our friend, Joanna Kimiech. And I think I met pretty much everyone at that Tech Talent North just by knowing the three of you. It was fantastic. And I think, and I would include Joanna, I know she's not on with us today, but I really see the three of you as such a force for good in the industry and really trying to make a difference. And we talk about those clues. I think whether it's on LinkedIn, whether it's on the previous episodes that you've been on with me and hopefully future episodes, but you've left so many clues. And I think there's just such a good energy that obviously when I see you in person, you know, we feel that energy, but it even exudes through the screen and through, you know, hopefully through people's earbuds as they're listening to this. So I just want to say thank you so much for joining us again. I'm going to talk to you after this because I have an idea that, Josh, you brought up. You didn't know you brought it up, but I have an idea now that we're going to talk about after this. So thank you so much for sharing your insights. What's the best way for people to reach out to either of you if they have questions about what you're doing these days?
I think LinkedIn for me. Listen, though, I want to say if you do reach out to me on LinkedIn to try to sell me something, I probably won't respond. But if you reach out to me and say, I'm really interested in what you talked about, I'd love to have a chat, I am always open to that. But the sales thing's probably not.
I will echo that 100%. Anybody that wants to have a beautiful conversation about people, culture, business, martial arts, life, philosophy, send me a note on LinkedIn, Joshua Siegel. I would love to chat with you. Sales pitches may or may not receive a response.
All right, fair enough. Well, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation, as always. We hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. As we've seen yet again, success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.